Welcome, everyone, to the Runaways Rundown podcast by Fantastic Geek, your official, unofficial voice of the Marvel Cinematic Community. My name is Matt, and joining me is the rainbow light shiner of the podcast. It's Pete. Hello, Pete.
You're witnessing a miracle, everyone. Don't be afraid. Rejoice. The Runaways Rundown podcast by Fantastic Geek for episode 206, Bury Another, is brought to you by the Alien Abstract Book of Poems in Alien Code. At least it's not all alliteration.
Happy New Year, Pete. Happy New Year, listeners. Can't help but chuckle at some of the unintentional Fantastic Geek synergy there. We do not discuss our intros with each other ahead of time. We both went to the light, shiny, miracle Church of Gaborim scene. I don't know what that's a metaphor for, but shows Fantastic Geek is working, Pete.
It's a miracle, and I fully expect a cease and desist order from the Church of Scientology by the end of the podcast.
Well, Pete, here we are, about to get going, talking Runaways. We, of course, have, oh my goodness, Pete, we have Star Trek Discovery that we are talking tomorrow.
Yes.
Assuming they post the thing on time, which they better, because I got a wedding this upcoming weekend.
And are you trying to say that the Discovery CBS PR people who tweeted out at 9 a.m. in the morning for Short Trek number 2 all the way back in November that it was online? Spoiler alert, it wasn't. It wasn't supposed to be online until 9 o'clock that night. Then in December, you know, when they fixed things, the most anticipated Short Trek, this the Saru-centric Brightest Star, did not post at the time it had been posted before. No, there had to be all this prodding to the social media accounts to tell them, hey, it's not updating, including the writers, Matt, freaking out about it not being posted. And you have faith that this is going to happen on time? I fully expect, in fact, we should check CBS All Access while we're on the air now to make sure it hasn't posted a week early. And a week ago on Instagram, their Instagram said that the fourth and final Short Trek, which is the Rainn Wilson directed Escape Artist with Harry Mudd, was now available, while their Twitter said coming in 2 weeks. So which is it? Can't all be Marvel PR, Matt, which just has it down. Maybe it's something about producing 304 episodes of TV in a little over 4.5 years.
Pete, it makes me appreciate Hulu, which is a website that seems to work. In fact, I remember for season one Runaways complaining a bit about the Hulu app or something. All I know is this, Pete, there's Netflix at the top. There's the other ones kind of in the pack, running to chase it, hoping to win the Kentucky Derby. That's a horse race. You know, and then there's like the dog at the horse race, and that's CBS All Access. But Pete, let's stay with our fine pedigree. Can you give us a rundown of this episode?
At Pride HQ, Tina wants to know what a disheveled Jonah did to her husband. He claims he merely defended himself from another assassination plot, but he won't have to see them anymore the day after tomorrow. The Minorus will repair his ship's computer systems. The Yorkses will run diagnostics on his ship's biomorphic shell. Victor will be roused to handle engineering issues, and the Deans will handle security. He will kill their children if they do not go along with it. Stacy points out the kids will die if he starts the ship, but Jonah reminds them the Hernandezes understood geology and not his ship. There's not going to be an earthquake, and as an added incentive, he's going to leave behind his abstract containing all the knowledge his people possess, which he'll decode so Pride can save the world. And he'll tell them where their children are. The Wilders don't get a launch day duty because Jonah says they've already fulfilled theirs. Carolina meets with her mother at home, who tells her she loved and trusted Jonah, but she put the runaways in the sacrificial box. There were other deaths, though, like Amy Minoru. At the hospital, Gert uses the Force to talk to Old Lace and asks her to take care of Molly. The nurse calls Gert Chase, and Janet arrives. The Yorkses tend to Robert, who tells them he used the inhibitor against Jonah. Pride talks about preventing the earthquake, and they are allured to the idea of acquiring the abstract. They don't know how Janet can read it, but Jeffrey tells them he gave it to her before the Wilders leave. Catherine tells Jeffrey to stay in touch and keep his guard up. Moody pop song playing. Alex adds parts to his super duper computer as Nico watches. He can't tell her his plan for fear of being left out again. Nico doesn't like leading. Their romantic tension fills the room, and she tries again with Molly, who she finds downstairs with Old Lace. Gert and Chase are missing, though. Chase arrives at the hospital to pick up Chase, whose mother is behind her. He won't go home with her. She tells him his father's okay and that Jonah requires another sacrifice, and she can't let it be him. At the Church of Gaborim, Frank explains simple symbolism to the congregation and reminds them each week they hold a coruscation ceremony, which is oddly not celebrated on the Star Wars capital planet of Coruscant, but could be. He welcomes Leslie back publicly after private meditation. Jonah looks on not so secretly from behind a curtain. Leslie tells the worshipers how proud she is of Frank and how they will go forward as partners from now on. Speaking of partners, Carolina practices her powers in private when Nico finds her because she has a hard time doing it in front of other people. But Nico points out they practice as a team so they can work better together. They have another fight, and Nico gives Carolina her space. Chase finally talks to Gert and unburdens himself of his feelings. She never considered how her plan would affect him. Molly meets them, and Gert asks him not to tell where they've been, but Chase ignores it. Carolina asks Alex for advice about Nico as the non-player character in the massive multiplayer role-playing game that is their lives. They repeatedly talk about how she shares a room above his. Alex tells her when it comes to Nico, you can't mess around with Amy. Chase comes in and calls a family meeting. The deans are summoned to see Jonah. He tries to sow division between them, but it doesn't work. They refuse to get him a sacrifice. Chase tells the group what his mother said about Jonah planning another sacrifice. Gert tries to spin her actions as positive. Chase announces he's moving into his own room. Carolina says Jonah will use the church for his sacrifice, and today's the weekly ceremony. The halls will be empty. They snap into action. Nico asks Carolina why she's not more conflicted about ending Jonah. They also decide to stop sharing the same room. Jeffrey works out with a gym owner he pays $70,000 a year before he hits the sauna. Then he tells him he's having issues with his wife. He replies to a text from Catherine that he's okay. Then hears a thump, and we see Jason on the floor before Jonah uses his fingers to touch Jeffrey in the shower. The Yorkses are surprised by Janet's alien crypto analysis skills. She thinks Jonah's promise is too good to be true and tells them she and Victor are going to shut his ship down. As Stacy worries about Gert and Molly, Janet tells them she saw Gert and Chase earlier and that they're okay. Stacy storms off. At the New Age ceremony, Carolina distracts the congregation. Jonah drags Jeffrey into the box. Frank thinks the light is a miracle, but Leslie doesn't think it's them. Alex hacks them into the room where Jonah has Victor and finds his father in the box. Molly carries him off, but they can't get Victor out because they could hurt him. Chase tells Gert he doesn't know how much more he can take. A refreshed Jonah revives. Chase fiddles with his fistigons when Gert goes to see him and apologizes for the very first time. Janet breaks Victor out and rejects his advance because they have a lot of work to do. Catherine calls Jeffrey concerned after he stood her up. In a room with a tuxedo and a furry bunny head on display, Alex keeps his kidnapped father in a straitjacket. Nico can't sleep, and Carolina comes in to eventually tell her that Jonah murdered Amy.
Pete, let's talk villains. Let's talk Jonah. It's funny to think that in the first season, he was not seen, at least the actor was not seen for near the first half, and now he's in every episode driving it, either from behind the scenes or skulking from balconies and dropping off nearly but not completely dead Roberts's. Jonah, bad guy.
Yeah, it's funny how, again, this show and the writing staff are skilled at manipulating you to just start to believe a character is possible of something better. And here in this episode, we see the worst of Jonah.
It is interesting. A couple of things that go on this episode. First, his villainy, just coming off of last episode and what happened to Robert. The fact here, though, that Jonah appears to take credit for it with the rest of the parents, I thought was notable because we knew Jonah was on the ropes and it was just a freak coincidence / story conceit that his attack was stopped. Also, it's of note in this episode that there is a bit of a story countdown. You know, it's what, 2 days until the ship takes off, that sort of thing. Do I expect that to be the next episode? Okay, maybe not, but we're only at the midpoint of the season here, and we are in some kind of countdown towards big thing that all these episodes have been leading to that happening. Could it be stretched out to episode 11, 12, 13? Maybe, but I'm starting to think that this Jonah storyline might end before the end of the season.
I mean, the concept of a story clock here is really dependent on his timeline, and with Janet and Victor working to, drive his anti-gravity drive haywire, you could certainly delay that.
Let's switch the focus now to Janet, who it's like damned if you do and damned if you don't. On the one hand, she's trying to do right by her son when she gets the call to the hospital, not knowing that it's Gert, then kind of hides all of that, hides that whole incident from everyone else. Is anyone hashtag Team Janet at this point? I guess other than Victor, who is still all lovey-dovey with her?
Ever Carradine has been given so much more valuable work to do in this second season. I can't help but think it's as a result of, the keeping it in the Hulu family between this show, between her work on Handmaid's Tale for the first two seasons. And I'm really, really glad they've let the character step out of the fearful shadow of her husband and in this dynamic now take the upper hand. But yeah, she's got to communicate with the other parents. She's got to not, okay these medicines, not outside of the care of Gert's own physician, rather than just placating her with them. She's got to make better choices.
More on Janet in a moment, but first, Pete, want to take an opportunity in this new year to thank all our patrons who support us on patreon.com/fantasticgeek, keeping the Fantastic Geek train going into 2019. Woo woo!
Wow. I was looking at the numbers as I was finishing up dinner today, and we are already committed to 94 podcast episodes in the new year, and none of that includes finishing Runaways. So what are we on? Six here, Matt. So what do we got? Seven more of these. So add that to it. We'll be over 100, and it's the people of patreon.com/fantasticgeek who make all of this happen, whether it's the bandwidth, whether it's the encouragement, whatever it is, could literally not do it without you.
Pete, do those numbers include the two secret projects?
They do. They do not include non-renewed shows to this point that we greatly expect. Runaways has to be on a short list for that. And given that the first season debuted in November of 2017 and we got the second season all at once at the very end of 2018, one has to hope we'll get the third season in 2019. But again, not quite sure. Yeah, there's a couple secret projects on there. Then there's the things you've come to expect from Fantastic Geek, the sixth season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. We're going to have Punisher here towards the end of the month. Still no precise date on that just yet, as we're recording a little bit before 2018 ends. And Jessica Jones as well, not to mention our resumption of God Friended Me, the second season of Star Trek Discovery. And Matt, I believe Mayhem is coming, spring 2019.
Good old Cloak and Dagger there. It's an exciting 2019 ahead of us, Pete. All made possible, again, by those who support us on patreon.com/fantasticgeek. So one more opportunity to say thank you to those who do so. Pete, let's talk some theories now. Janet, quote unquote, sets Chase free. You know, the old, if you love it, set it free. Is this a sign of her trust and love, or is this a move of weakness on her part?
I feel the concern for him there. I mean, we fault her from a morality standpoint of not letting the other parents know. Something that crossed my mind as I watched this episode, every one of the children at this point in the season with this episode has now come into contact with a member of Pride. We had Molly, Nico, and Carolina fight Tina. We had Chase was the last one here come into contact with his mom. Gert came into contact. Alex had been abducted by his dad. Really, Old Lace is the only one who has not come across any members of Pride, because if she does, it's on.
Pete, Leslie and Frank, now partners for life.
I think that they didn't take the bait when Jonah attempted to, you know, get in their heads. Speaks a lot, but at the same time, we know, pun intended, how dim Frank can be. I mean, he thinks that's an honest to goodness miracle they're seeing when Leslie knows, you know, that's probably my daughter's light. They're doing something. I'm going to kind of like act similarly distracted. So I applaud her, at least publicly, in their strange faith for uniting, but yeah, I do not buy the togetherness in spirit.
Do the kids these days wonder aloud about being NPCs in MMORPGs?
I mean, there's the whole theory that we're living in a simulation, which people have actually set odds on, that there is a chance that it's actually a thing. I love that Carolina obviously did not know what that meant, and that Alex is our, you know, video game playing nerd, a little closer to what Matt and I are, that obviously understand that.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess here's my real question. Is this actually the way kids talk, or is this the way a bunch of really successful, you know, maybe not a bunch, but two 40-something producing partners have their cool kids write their cool kids to talk, yo?
I will split it down the middle. This is how 20-something-year-old writer's room writers and assistants think that teens talk.
Pete, a bit more of a substantial question here, my last one. Stacy's take that Jonah's information, his technology, may still positively impact humanity, you know, really change the course of our species, our planet. It might be unlikely. Is it worth the gamble?
Oh, I can definitely see why they're interested in it, but this is where Janet's villainy is really kind of dulled in this episode. She sees through it, and she's right to see through it, as if this guy is just going to leave this, you know, instruction manual to serve man, Matt, behind as his biomorphic shell, you know, lovingly breaks through the crust of Earth and does no harm whatsoever to them or their children. I mean, you know, this guy wants to leave this place a smoking cinder when he's leaving, if not firing on them as he does it.
It's a cookbook, Pete. It's a cookbook. What theories do you have?
This is not so much a theory, just as it's an observation. Jonah is just walking around in public, disheveled and bloody at this point. Show me a scene where he says, after he drops Robert off, okay, I'm getting back into my Uber now to go back to the church and I will await you, instead of the idea of thinking he drove himself there and people are seeing him in the condition he's in. And then getting into the church, dragging Jeffrey's body. Okay, the halls are clear, but are people outside in Los Angeles just completely dulled to a man who's neck is flaking and he needs to wear an ascot and he's covered in blood, dragging a black man into a church of light?
Well, when you put it like that, it makes my answer seem silly, which is maybe people in Los Angeles are like, oh, he must be doing some sort of kale colon cleanse. That's why he looks that way. Gee whiz, maybe 6 months from now, we'll all be doing the skin shed facial layer. I don't know.
Coming in 2019, the biomorphic shell of the ship is brought up for the first time here. Apart from the fact that Jonah tasks several members of Pride with his computer systems and engineering on things they've never ever worked on before. Like 2 days from now, by the way, you're going to do this. But this biomorphic shell really caught my attention. So we know that there are beings inside the ship. The ship now has some kind of biological thing going on. What'd you make of all that, Matt?
I must confess, I didn't quite read the notion as fully as you are suggesting, which is the ship is alive. I wonder, and I'm not trying to take this writing room to task too much, although I think we've wagged our finger an appropriate amount thus far. I do wonder how much techity tech they tech in this episode in terms of, like, it's got a anti-gravity propulsion unit and biomorphic this, and how much of it is like, yeah, let's thesaurus some more to get cool things in there. Like, do I think the fact that it's a biomorphic shell, do I think that's going to play a major role in the second half of this season? Honestly, no. Could it? Okay, maybe. I think it's just like, what far out weirdo things can we have him do besides super engine? Let's have part mechanized, part living shell for the thing.
What about Jonah potentially kidnapping Carolina?
Well, that is, I think, a direction that can bear a bit more story fruit. There is that connection of father and daughter. There is that notion that he might want to take her with him in order to, you know, give her the best life possible, show her the way things really are, you know, for the glowy folks out there in the stars. I don't know that she would be outright wrong to not at least consider it. I mean, it's quite an opportunity that she could have. Now, do I expect that that's the direction the show is ultimately going to go because, you know, Runaways, the show, and she's a runaway? No, but I think that where we get from here to the end of the season, it could be an interesting route to take.
What about this abstract, Matt? Leaving behind all of this knowledge that his people possess for humans, does this violate General Order 1, a.k.a. the Prime Directive?
Well, I know, of course, you are humorously mixing your fictional universes there, but I think the point that you raise is a good one. Can, in any sort of conscionable way, can you leave this information to an undeveloped or underdeveloped society? I think the answer is no. But now if the response is, but Jonah is a bad, bad guy, all right, fine, but if he considers those around him to be these inferior creatures, why would he want to empower them? I mean, he could certainly promise the empowerment, but I don't think he has any intention of following through.
Gert, using the Force to speak to Old Lace, Matt.
Pete, once again, you're mixing your universes. I think it's like, do I think that the psychic connection can last over whatever distance that is? I'll just pick a number, 5 miles. You know, it's not that unreasonable. Or is it that unreasonable to assume that there's a hospital that far from where they're at? Maybe it is, just with my vague knowledge of Los Angeles, but let's say 5 miles. Is that the Wi-Fi connection distance that there is for psychically connecting with a dinosaur? On the one hand, no. On the flip side, we are talking a psychic connection with a dinosaur. So can the story get away with it? Yeah. Looking ahead, though, just to continue my theme of looking ahead here, is it smart storytelling to have a connection that is that long? You know, like, at what point is it like, oh no, Gert's in a well. Quick, Old Lace, bring everyone. Oh no, Gert's trapped in the factory. All right. Still tell the Runaways to come save me, Old Lace. Like, at what point do we give the kryptonite here to take her power away a little bit? It seems not by distance.
Are the Wilders' problems going to continue, particularly now that Jeffrey is incommunicado?
Pete, the family continues to be in what appears to be this downward spiral. I mean, every young person watching this show and every young person inside the adults watching this show must have had this moment where it's like, yeah, Dad, I hate you too. And I might not have Alex's ability to be like, I'm the boss now. You're in a straitjacket and I hate you. But, you know, we've talked time and time again how universal this show is. And there was that moment of like, yeah, stick it to the boss, stick it to the man, stick it to you, Dad. Now I'm in charge. And this is an incredibly fractured place for them to be. Catherine is increasingly out of the loop with things, and I don't know how they get better from this. I don't know that they have to.
Did Gert get the ability to use the Force to speak to Old Lace from the Coruscation ceremony, which obviously, Matt, came from Coruscant, where the Jedi Order was there for 1,000 generations?
Well, we've had the psychic connection established well before this episode. I read what we saw here as just an extension of it, and not a new beginning, a new hope, if you will.
the Steins plan, which now that Victor is out, is to muck with the anti-gravity drive and thereby prevent Jonah's launch, conceivably to prevent an earthquake, Matt. But if you reflect back to future Chase on the old time travel TV that Victor had created, does what they do to prevent it actually cause the big one?
Well, that's your great kind of time travel question, right? With the knowledge of the future, how can you, you know, do you nonetheless cause the future? Which is to say, Pete, are you going to Back to the Future it, or are you going to 12 Monkeys it? I do wonder, too, this notion that we have seen a future where this destruction has occurred. Now, of course, the message has gone back in time, hopefully, to prevent the destruction. And here we are in the time circle again. All I know is this, Pete. I'm sure that James Marsters is happy to be no longer playing scenes where his entire job for the scene is, all right, stand there in your tight underwear and don't move. We're going to light you all
over.
Or
move your fingers.
Move your fingers a little bit. And oh, by the way, in this episode, we're going to shoot you from a lower angle. So bulge on, my man.
And lastly, Matt, I continue to marvel at the things, pun unintended there, at the things visible in the Runaways' subterranean lair, this time the full-on tuxedo and the bunny head in the final scene between Alex and his father. What the heck?
I saw some of that too, and it was like, what is going on with this set dressing here? I think that's
maybe... Is this like the apple... the half-eaten apple in the wall in Defenders that was popped into drywall that we assumed was some kind of, you know, subliminal message. And turns out it was a jerk on the set of Defenders who took a bite out of an apple and stuck it in the wall, and all the scenes were filmed with it.
Maybe this is like Room 237, the documentary about The Shining. Maybe, Pete, we need to just really be our most intelligent selves here. Okay, what was it? To pick a panda, a bunny? What was the animal?
It was a bunny.
A bunny, okay. Bunnies, let's see. Fast, tortoise in the hair, take your time. The Runaways are acting too fast. If they act too fast, they destroy Los Angeles. Slow down. Think your things through. Boom, that's the metaphor. Either that or the Runaways faked the moon landing.
What's with the tuxedo?
It's Pete, that is a metaphor for who shall protect us. Will we go for the tuxedo clad James Bond, you know, from kind of the military industrial intelligentsia class, or will we defend ourselves? Marvel's Runaways says nay. The answer shall come from ourselves, from the people, from a mix of beautiful, a beautiful rainbow mix of people, not the old world order. Boom, metaphors everywhere.
Listen, I can't even attempt to argue with that analysis. Let's see what people are saying about this episode.
Let's hear from Fred in the Netherlands.
Hello, Matt and Pete. This is Fred from the Netherlands with some feedback for Runaways. Season 2, Episode 6. Before I start with that, I want to say something about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 1, Episode 15, which I just watched. The episode called Yes Man, with Jamie Alexander as the Asgardian Sif coming to Earth, and Lorelei, who is tempting all the men in that episode. And I really, really, really liked that episode. I'm starting to get a real Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. fan. And after this episode, so episode 15, I'm allowed to watch Captain America, The Winter Soldier, because I really try to follow the MCU timeline. So perhaps I have to skip one Runaways feedback, because you are recording a Runaways a day, and I try to keep up. watching a Runaways in the evening and recording early morning this audio feedback, which is okay, now I'm on holiday, but I don't know if I can keep up with that. And I really noticed that I'm not a binge watcher. Actually, I'm a bit weird in that sense, that if a series is very, very good, I even keep sometimes my episodes just to save them, not to squander them, and keep the good stuff for a little later. I think a lot of binge watchers wouldn't understand that at all. And perhaps they think I have a strong character, but that's not the case. I'm just a nerd, that's all. So I'm also looking forward to your podcast about that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. episode, which got an 8.2 on IMDb, whereas this Runaways episode got a 9.0. Well, if I had to choose, sometimes I really don't understand these grades of IMDb. So, what did I think of this episode? I think it brought the story quite some steps forward. It got more and more clear what Jonah is, what his goals are. I liked a lot that Carolina decided to tell Deco the truth. I was very scared about what would happen if she did that, of when Nico would have found out. But at least she took the steps to tell her herself and not Nico finding it out. So that was probably much better. Carolina was brave. Carolina was brave talking to her mother. I really wonder what she will do. It's all about family, some people say. Like Janet says, we are your family. I'm getting a little bit annoyed about Chase. Chase is a little bit too hasty in his judgment and conclusion. I don't like how he treats Gert and immediately takes big steps like going to sleep somewhere else, etc., etc. Also, not taking any step towards his mother. Well, is this just a adolescent guy, adolescent boy, whatever? Okay. So, this was all for this episode. And perhaps my next Runaways feedback about episode 7 will be about Captain America, the Winter Soldier. Sometimes I think it's not so nice to be behind with all kinds of series. On the other hand, I have a lot of fun ahead, and I'm sure that it's coming. Greetings, all the best, Fred from the Netherlands.
Pete, Fred is an anti-binge kind of guy. He said, keep the good stuff. He wants to hold on to it, Pete. I agree.
Well, I mean, we've talked, if it wasn't our last episode, it was the one before that where we talked about the disadvantages. And clearly people do not remember as well. And this is even with previously on segments and stuff like that. And in like podcasting, where, you know, we're talking about these episodes, we've heard from so many people who will slow down so that they can watch an episode, listen to us, and then watch the next episode and kind of have that water cooler discussion. I think there's a lot to be said for that. I'm not just touting what we do, what podcasters do, but in terms of spacing it out even a little bit. That said, there are times, whether it's an expiration date when I'm given several episodes of show and then they're going to go away if I don't watch them in a certain time or anything like that, that it's really kind of required. But yeah, I would tend to, you know, go with the anti-binge model, but, you know, this is kind of the way things are going right now.
Fred had questioned some of the ratings and whatnot for IMDb. I know from my perspective, IMDb, in terms of its core information, you know, who's been credited for what, it has that corporate spine, which is very trustworthy, but I feel like it's a wilderness system when it comes to trivia ratings. I mean, there's an ongoing joke that you can click on just about any movie, and, you know, it's not literally just about any movie, but you can see on IMDb, Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sylvester Stallone were both rumored to be the male lead in this movie, you know, regardless of whatever it might be. So I think, you know, I think there's kind of that dual nature to IMDb. Do I take it as a rating the way I might, you know, Rotten Tomatoes or Cinema Score or something like that? Absolutely not.
Yeah, that a S.H.I.E.L.D. episode from, you know, 4.5 years ago has a lower rating than a Runaways episode that was just released. Speaks to several things. The most noticeably, I think, a recency bias. Oh, this is the greatest thing ever. And you got to remember, too, this is a show that's not primarily aimed at teens, but is about teens. And there are teens and young adults who watch this who are very passionate about it and will go on an IMDb and leave a review, whereas it is clearly not the same audience. I'm not saying there's not some overlap. I mean, look at yours truly right here. But, you know, it's a different mentality when it comes to leaving those reviews.
Lastly, bringing it back directly to the show, Pete, Fred kind of raised the question about family here. So my question to you, who is the better family for the kids, their own parents or the Runaways as a family unit?
I think the kids are a far greater family for themselves. While the parents love their children, there's no denying that. The actions that they take, misguided, really have harmed other lives irreparably. When you look at the kids, their idealism and the hope that they have for the world that they're going to continue to live in and other people live in is far more idealistic and thus preferred.
Well, Pete, it doesn't take much hope to have your voice heard on the podcast. All you need to do is be in touch. How can people be in touch with you?
You can find me on Twitter at Peter, P-I-E-T-E-R-J, Ketelaar, K-E-T-E-L-A-A-R, 10,268. Followers, can't be wrong.
And while I'm personally on Twitter as Looking Back Lost, do be in touch with the podcast. Comment on FantasticGeek.com. Check us out on Twitter, Instagram, and Gmail, where we are Fantastic Geek as well. But wait, Pete, there's more.
Facebook.com/FantasticGeek, all one word with the PH, like it today.
Well, Pete, we will be back on Friday to talk more Runaways as we fully enter the second half of this season. All sorts of drama afoot. With that, I will say adios to all our listeners and give you the final word.
If one more person tells me they're doing what's best for me, I'm going to lose it. I was arrested. The car was impounded. There was no way for me to avoid.